You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hope you got your adrenaline pumping, because we have the action list. We're going to be talking about our top five Voyager action sequences, our favorites, probably yours too. And I have been dying all week to know what you've got, Tristan, there. So, researching this, I'm wondering if we're going to have a lot of duplicates. There seem to be a lot of sentimental favorites among fans. We're going to have to find out if we have copied everybody's list or if we've actually come up with something original.
Now, one thing that I want to ask you is, when you were making the list, now, did you just do all of your favorite ship battles, or did you throw in some hand-to-hand as well?
I threw in a little bit of hand-to-hand. How about you?
I may slip a hand-to-hand in there, but it's mainly ship battles for me.
I think when people think of action sequences, they are primarily thinking of ship battles. But just to try and be a little different, I got a little more in there. We'll see. Let's see what happens. Let's just get this thing going, shall we?
Let's lightning round this.
Okay, top choice. Well, not top choice. First choice. What have you got?
Even though the beginning of my list is going to start early on in the process, I'm going to probably jump around in the timetable. But if the top of a list when it comes to ship battles, I got to start with the Kazon fight in Caretaker. It's just, in my opinion, it's just absolutely amazing. You have the Maquis ship, you have that gigantic Kazon ship, and yeah, you have Voyager, and you have the Array. It's a dramatic battle. It's also a really great special effects battle, and you have a kamikaze action from Chakotay, and
yes,
you have the Maquis ship that rams itself into the Kazon ship, this massive Kazon ship. And then it slams into the Array and damages the Array, and all that's left is Voyager left standing with a few
right.
other Kazon. And it's just, the series started off with a bang.
Yeah, literally.
And
yes,
I just think it was a great way to start the show, and we had some science, we had some drama, and we had some action.
Yeah, every great series needs to start off with an epic special effects battle, if it's sci-fi, right? I mean, yeah, of course. What made me consider this one was Chakotay sacrificing his ship to destroy the Array and essentially strand them all in the Delta Quadrant. Not that I'm blaming Chakotay. Obviously, Janeway gave the order, but just saying, logistics here. That I did not put this on my list, though, so I'm glad that you did.
Well, yeah, I was really scared because I was really scared that we were going to have duplicates going back and forth, but I'm relying on you to give me the uncommon choices.
Well, I'll see what I can do here. I'm going to put out, for my first choice, Chakotay and Kim versus LaForge and the USS Challenger in Timeless.
I thought about this one. I thought about the episode because, you know, just Voyager slamming into the ice was so cool, you know, but it's not
yeah.
really a battle. But then I was like, yeah, but you have a galaxy class starship going after. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, okay, when you think of special effects for this episode, you're not usually thinking of the battle. But, okay, yeah, the whole thing with Voyager slamming into the ice aside, you've still got some cool stuff here because you've got Captain LaForge in the USS Challenger going after Chakotay and Kim. They're both on their own respective missions. I mean, it's heroes on either side. You know, they both have to do what they've got to do. And
yeah,
right at the very last minute, Kim succeeds. It's very exciting. And, I mean, you know, they could have easily lost their lives to LaForge. And I think maybe this is a choice more for nostalgic purposes because it is Captain LaForge. If it had just been some no-name guy, it probably would not have made my list. But this is Captain LaForge we're talking about, so it makes my list.
Well, it definitely added some depth to it because, yeah, we have the TNG connection with Geordi, and he doesn't have his visor on, you know, like, I don't even remember if he had well, obviously he wouldn't have his visor on, but I don't even remember if he had his contacts in. Did he have his normal contacts?
You know, I wish I could tell you.
I for some reason, I remember something different. Like, did they even go so far advanced in the future that they could give him normal looking irises? I honestly can't remember. So folks, don't write me any letters, you know, saying like,
right. You know, like, we're not going to research this right now and find out. This is just something I've never really thought to notice while watching that episode.
Going into the corners of my brain, I think they might have kept the first contact blue irises. So
okay, everybody get on the forums and tell us what happened here and let us know. We'd appreciate it. trek.fm/forums. Okay, we are on to round two already. Let's hit it.
Oh, that's a fast round one. All right, so round two, number two on my list, which again, this is not in any particular order, not in temporal order or even order of badassery. That'd be Year of Hell Part Two, The Final Battle.
Okay. First duplicate. It made my list as well. How can it not make your list?
Exactly. Like, out of everything that's on my list right now, I knew that this would be the one that we would overlap because this is a fantastic battle. I mean, all throughout both episodes of Year of Hell, there is action after action after action. And, I mean, an entire deck explodes at one point.
Yeah,
Voyager
yeah.
rams itself into the Krynum ship. They have an alliance where they bring several other different types of aliens to, you know, bombard the Krynum ship. And, you know, like, people die, things explode, you know. And of course, I want you to do your Kate Mulgrew impression of her last words in the episode.
Time's up.
That has to be your best one yet.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I didn't think it was that good. Maybe it turned out better than I thought.
No, you're getting better every single time you do that.
Oh,
that was
good.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, I will keep practicing then so I get really good.
So why do you like this one?
Well, let's face it. This entire episode is an epic battle. And if you have to narrow it down to one segment, you have to go for this scene here because Voyager and Janeway, they're sacrificing themselves, blow up the Krynum ship, press the reset button, and life can continue as it always should have been.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be on the list. Even if you made an all of Trek list out of all five series, this would be on the top five.
Absolutely. So, okay, popular choice. It had to be here, and now we've taken care of it. Stamp of approval. I think I'm going to bring up another one that may be a duplicate, but I'm going to do it anyway. How about the Borg versus Species 8472 in Scorpion Part 1?
I knew you were going to choose this one, so I did not put it on my list.
Good for you. Because, of course, this had to make my list. I love Scorpion. This is the ultimate clash of the Titans. You know, epic aliens of power and prestige. And it's usually the Borg kicking people's asses, right? Not the other way around. Mm-hmm. So that makes Species 8472 extraordinarily threatening. Even though it's really reminiscent of the film Independence Day, the effect that is, I do like the special effect where all of the Species 8472 ships connect and then use their energy through like this funnel to blow up a Borg planet.
Yeah.
A whole planet! Boom! And that's how the episode ends, almost. And so this is pretty serious.
I remember seeing that live for the first time. And it's, you know, we've never seen anything like it on Star Trek whatsoever. And just the sheer magnitude of how it destroyed an entire planet in a second.
Yeah.
And it was a Borg planet on top of that. And I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this before, but I remember my entire family was watching, and it's specifically my dad just went, oh, you know, it's just,
you have mentioned that.
What happened? How did they do that? You know, and it's just, that's the power of Star Trek and the power of fiction, is that you get so wrapped up in it that you believe the world that they create and the set of rules and laws that they establish. And so you get enveloped by it. And when someone comes along and throws away those rules, like the Borg being the biggest and the baddest, You're like, holy crap, there's a new kid on the block who can wipe these people off the face of the galaxy. And yeah. It's just, it makes you scream. It makes you scream with excitement. And on top of that, I want to see a Borg planet. I want on the land. Okay, you know, in First Contact, when we see Earth kind of transform into a Borg planet, I want to know what a Borgified San Francisco looks like. I want to see it.
Would that not have been interesting? Yeah, I agree. I want to see that now too.
Yeah, because we see Borg ships, you know, and we've seen a Borg space station and everything like that. But I want to see land-based Borg. You know, do the Borg have a navy? You know, like what would it look like? You know.
Yeah, exactly. How would a Borg planet function exactly? I mean, do they have little hives scattered throughout the land? What a thought. Okay, that's something I'm going to be thinking about all night now.
Well, I'll use the Borg as a jumping off point to my third choice, and it would be part one of Unimatrix Zero.
I'm so glad you chose this.
Yes, it's an amazing episode with such a cliffhanger where B'Elanna, Tuvok, and Janeway allow themselves to get assimilated. And I know a lot of people hate that part of it because they're like, okay, well, if you can stop the assimilation process, then the Borg are you declaw the Borg. But anyway, disregarding that, we're talking about the battle, the space battle. It's a tactical cube. We see a tactical Borg cube, which makes you wonder, why didn't they always send a tactical Borg cube when they were attacking Earth then? But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Problem, but strictly space battles here, people.
Strictly space battles. The tactical Borg cube is like a normal Borg cube, but with like a metal shielding on it, like a duranium alloy, whatever you want to call it, of just these patterns all over it that just make it look even cooler and even harsher. And you see Voyager just fly it on a strafing run where it's on top and shooting it with phasers as it strafes the surface of the cube. And this is the one where we see the Delta Flyer 1 explode into pieces and a little part of you dies as a fan.
I thought we weren't going to talk about that on this podcast.
And also on top of that, it's so funny because in this world, how many times have we seen a ship explode and then by the next episode they have a replacement?
Right?
Yeah. Like we saw it with the Delta Flyer, we saw it with the Defiant, we saw it with the Enterprise.
Always got to come back.
They always got to come back, and it's always like, hey, it's fine. We got another one. It's cool.
Right. Yeah, we'll even take another ship and just rename it. It's fine.
Yeah, we'll slap on a new name and just add a letter to the end of the registry.
Yeah,
it's cool.
It's cool. No big deal. Yeah. I'm glad you put this one on your list because, I don't know, in doing my research through all the episodes, I knew this was a fan favorite in the sense of an action sequence, maybe not necessarily the story as a whole. And I thought, no, I've already got too many of the quote-unquote popular choices already by the time I was considering this one. So I intentionally left it off, and I'm glad that you covered it.
Well, good. So how about yours?
Okay. How about Voyager coming home in Endgame? Again, this is a Borg thing. Let's keep talking Borg. I mean, whether you have issues with the series finale or not, I think most people would agree that watching Voyager make its triumphant return to the Alpha Quadrant in a Borg sphere, you know, the Federation ships are waiting for them on the other side. It was one hell of a way to make an entrance back home. I will definitely give the episode that. Not much more, but I'll give it that.
Yeah, it definitely knew how to end on an iconic image of them coming home, the bursting out of the sphere, out of the massive explosion. There's dozens of Federation ships waiting for them, and it's Voyager knows how to make an entrance.
Sure as heck does. It pretty much did that to kick off in Caretaker, and then again in Endgame when it came back.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, you know, Voyager's ripped. It's got some badassery in it, definitely.
It's got some muscle.
It does. All right, what's your next choice?
Well, my next choice, number four, is the battle between the Voyager and Equinox in part two.
Another duplicate.
Okay, I was wondering if this one was going to be chosen by you as well. The reason why I chose this one is because you have two very smart captains, and they're going after each other, and it's not very often you see two Federation ships fighting one another.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Obviously, we've seen the Enterprise and the Reliant, and we've seen in Deep Space Nine with Paradise Lost. It's something that's unique every single time they do it. And
it is. Here's the real kicker, Tristan, is who would have envisioned two Federation ships duking it out in the Delta Quadrant?
And it makes you kind of sad if you think about it. You know, like they were supposed to be, they're supposed to be there for each other. And that's another element to it that I really enjoyed, is that this isn't just a space battle where I hate you and you hate me, and so we're going to try to destroy each other. This had an added emotional layer to it that isn't always there at battles, because it's two Federation officers that should be at peace and should be working together. And they're alone in the Delta Quadrant. They could have made their voyage so much easier. They could have helped each other, but no. They went to blows, and it says something about the situation. And also that moment when she destroys the nacelle of the Equinox, when she drops out of warp, destroys the nacelle, and just explodes. Awesome.
It really was. Yeah. Who can argue with that?
But what did you like about it?
Well, pretty much just the fact that, like you said, you have two very smart captains. You would normally think Federation ships are going to work together in this kind of environment. And this was their chance to do that, too. I mean, 5 years, all of a sudden there's another Federation ship in the mix. What's going to happen? And lo and behold, they end up having to fight one another because they're very different people. And Ransom obviously did his thing, and that very much hurt Janeway when she found out. Once again, she considers herself alone. So I just like the uniqueness of the situation more than anything, I think.
Yeah, it's a very unique situation, and only Voyager could have told it this way, with the added bonus of being isolated in the Delta Quadrant.
Absolutely.
Well, since we've had two duplicates so far, what is your next one?
Okay, this is going to be my last one, because I listed six. This is all that I have left, but it's my favorite, actually. I'm saving the best for last. And that is Klingon Janeway fighting off Klingons in The Killing Game.
Okay, so if we were running out of time or if we needed more to talk about, I was going to bring this up as an honorable mention.
Yeah, I love this. It kicks off the episode in this way. You're wondering, why is Janeway in Klingon makeup? Because obviously she's not really a Klingon. She's fighting. What is going on? Then she gets injured. And then we find out, oh, it's the Hirogen. Well, what's going on? What are they doing? Why are they injuring her? And what in the world? Great way to kick off an excellent two-part episode. It's very different. And Janeway really does give it her all. That is some serious hand-to-hand combat. So that's why this made my list.
Yeah, it was a fantastic cold open. I mean, there's a few times when Star Trek really nails the cold open. And this is definitely one of those times, because you're confused and excited at the same time. It's like,
I don't
know what's happening, but it's awesome, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I love Scorpion so much. That 20-second open. Mm-hmm. Borg ship blows up. Jaws on the floor. What?
Yeah, because, you know, we've never seen a Borg cube explode so fast and so quickly before. It's always been after a lot of work or a lot of episode, a lot of effort or a long episode.
Normally it's the Borg cube firing one torpedo and blowing up a whole ship. So, I mean, it's pretty serious when it's the Borg who are doing the blowing up. I do have to mention one little honorable mention in this episode. And I didn't think it was quite strong enough to hold on its own, but let me throw it in here. How about Neelix and his gang of Klingons raging through the town to kill the Hirogen?
I Neelix in Klingon makeup and screaming about the about how hunger is the greatest enemy. That has to be one of my favorite moments of all time. There's so many moments in Star Trek, obviously Star Trek Voyager, where Neelix just steals the show for me. I don't care what people say about him, and I've said this many times on the show before. I get it. I understand why you don't like Neelix, but that doesn't mean that we all don't have to like Neelix. And I do, and that is one of the moments that make me love him.
I think it is my favorite Neelix moment, to be quite honest. It is hilarious, and it's still very Neelix. You know, it's not like they had to write him out of character to put him in that position and have him do all of these things. And I love the fact later on in the series, in Prophecy, in Season 7, when they find that ship of Klingons. Neelix has a thing for Klingons.
I think he became enraptured by their culture when he started researching them because of B'Elanna, because he had a half Klingon on his crew, and I think he fell in love with the culture, and you can totally see that happening. I mean, it happens all the time here where somebody goes and visits a place, or they research it online, or they read books, and they just fall in love with the idea of somebody else's culture, and I think that's what happened with Neelix.
I totally agree. And I can envision him living on Kronos or something like that. Had he gone home with the crew, I think, honestly, he might have just gone over there and feasted with some Klingons, gotten drunk, and had a really good time.
He definitely would have visited. He definitely would have done that.
Definitely. Okay, well, you've got one more pick left, do you not?
I do. I do have one. I have one more ship battle, and I have a few other things that I'd like to talk about with you. But my last ship battle that I would like to talk about is the city battle in Dragon's Teeth.
I'm so glad you picked this. I left it just for you.
I feel like this one gets looked over a lot because the episode is a little subpar. You know, it had great potential, had a great premise, and it just wasn't executed very well. And it's definitely not one of my favorites, but the CGI and the special effects and everything that was done, you get to see Voyager fly through skyscrapers. Just imagine if this was like a post-apocalyptic New York City or Chicago or something like that.
Where it's
flying through these huge and tall buildings as they're exploding and as their fire's raining down upon them. And you have all these fighters just come up and surround it and try to pick it off. And it's just... I'm a big sucker for the small fighters. I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And so when I see small fighters, it makes me think of an X-Wing, you know, coming up and, attacking a Star Destroyer or whatever. And I got that. We got a little taste of that in Star Trek. And I loved it in Deep Space Nine when we see the fighters, the Federation mini fighters. I mean, I just wish we could have explored that even more where, okay, we don't just have shuttles that can have a phaser, but we have actual small one-man fighters in the 24th century, I think is really cool.
It is a cool idea. It didn't get explored much in Star Trek. It did, however, get explored in Babylon 5. I think we need to add Babylon 5 references to the drinking game because this is at least the third or fourth episode where I've mentioned it. But that's certainly how they did their combat, and it is a very cool... It's a cool-looking concept, if nothing else, and I totally agree... This sequence gets overlooked because it's on an episode that most people, quite honestly, forget about.
Mm-hmm.
But this visually is just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And this is, even though, like I said before, even though the episode's not that great, can you imagine this on Blu-ray?
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. And I'm going to watch the episode several times just for this.
Yeah, it's going to be phenomenal.
It is.
So now that we have the ship battles out of the way, I just wanted to ask your opinion on a few things because you brought up the Klingon fight, but there's one hand-to-hand battle, well, actually hand-to-claw battle that I wanted to talk about, and that's Janeway and Macrocosm.
Oh, hey. Okay, why did that episode not occur to me at all?
Well, because, you know, it's not really Janeway fighting with a Batleth or in a phaser battle with somebody else. It's these macro viruses flying around the ship. And so she shoots them with a gun. She stabs them with a knife. She literally wrestles with them. And I just think this one definitely needs to have an honorable mention because this is the first time we saw Janeway be a total badass.
Oh, no, you're totally right. Yeah, Janeway in her biceps holding the phaser rifle. That's what that episode was. It's an entire action sequence unto itself.
This was the debut of the sweaty tank top.
That's right. Yes, it was. Yeah, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I forgot about this episode. I'm so glad you brought this up.
One last thing before we go is we have to have another honorable mention to... a fight in Projections with Neelix and the Kazon.
Oh, this makes me think of another one, but let's talk about this first.
Well, he's throwing fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, he's throwing tomatoes or something.
Throwing tomatoes, he's throwing a spatula, and this is where we get the ultimate Voyager insult, you Kazon puss hog.
Yes. Yes, and granted, Neelix is not the best fighter. He's not exactly throwing the best objects, but that's fantastic. That makes me think of the spaghetti fight in...
Oh, that's right.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, the one where they take care of the baby on the...
It reminds me of the spaghetti fight in Parturition.
That's right. I freaking love that fight. I'm so glad you brought that up because that has to go down. Yeah, nobody bleeds, nobody dies, but it's a fight.
It is. I mean, there's a little bit of spaghetti destroyed, or Leola root at least. I'm not entirely sure what was in that stuff. But yes, these things have to make the episode. Very good way to finish off.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, spaghetti fights aren't the only thing that we're talking about here on Trek FM this week, so here is a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Star Trek 2009 5th Anniversary.
So I wrote a whole big thing about all that stuff. Where's Gary Mitchell? Why are there Romulans? This doesn't make any sense. And why is Tyler Perry in this movie?
Earl Grey.
Ferengi.
Can I have a root beer, please?
They're all examples of Ferengi. Dad! Not being Ferengis, so...
Sorry, that was a terrible, terrible... Earl Grey, now with 90% more Ferengi impersonations.
The Orb.
Great O'Brien episodes.
You know, obviously, too, I love the fact that Miles is not afraid to kind of bend the rules and do what he thinks is right.
The Ready Room.
The sound of her voice.
It's a masterful portrayal of the working class hero kind of thing that O'Brien is without making me feel, you know, guilty and without coming across as too heavy-handed.
To the journey!
Darkling Rewrite.
It's that awkward moment when you accidentally call your teacher mom in class.
I hate to tell you, but I don't know if I ever did that.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Sorry, dude.
Warp 5.
Flux.
And you see that, I think, in the way that he cares for his patients and he takes care of them with what we would consider very strange remedies. And yet, he's taking care of the whole person, and I really, really like that.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The Mount Rushmore of Trek.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, like, Chris, every time that you make a joke about Robin Leffler, I myself think, yes, he's right. Oh, wait, he's making a joke. Oh, that's too bad, because he's right.
Continuing mission.
Star Trek Horizon.
The main reason I wanted to do the movie was to close out storylines that Enterprise didn't get a chance to. I felt like it was kind of my contribution to the show that meant a lot to me.
Literary Treks.
Mission Gamma Twilight.
I don't think that Bashir knows how to be in a mature relationship. When Ezri starts exerting her own identity more, he doesn't know how to deal with that.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have new Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week on every single freaking platform you could possibly think of, as well as our pretty page on iTunes. If you haven't checked that out yet, go to itunes.com/trekfm and give it a little bit of a look. Now, none of our shows would be possible without the help of our sponsor, so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for this show is audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, Tristan, what are we doing next week?
What we're doing next week, Char, is we're talking about Season 5 Marathon. That's right. We're going to go through and get our top 5 best watch lists. We're not talking the best 5 episodes. We're talking about the best episodes to watch in a 5-episode marathon. Now, Season 5 is where it's at in Star Trek Voyager.
Wait. Didn't we say that about Season 4?
Yes, we did. But then we progressed to Season 5.
Fair enough. Yes, this is going to be a fantastic marathon no matter how you slice it.
We're talking, we have Drone, Extreme Risk, Timeless, 30 days, Bride of Chaotica.
Oh my god.
And that's just in the first couple of months of the season. This is going to be fantastic.
Coming up with only 5 is going to be so hard.
Absolutely, but you'll have to tune in next week to hear it.
That's right. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!